Welcome to War Gaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and today we have, you guessed it, another great episode. That's right, every episode is great for many different reasons because each of them are unique, their own little special snowflake. Although, did you know snowflakes are not unique? There can be more than one that are identical. That's your fact for the day. But today we have a really cool and amazing guest that I've been dying to get on for, I'm not going to lie, years. And I've been a big fan of this person, big fan of what they do, and big fan of a company that they're associated with. So if these aren't enough hints for you, and they might be, but if they're not, I want to introduce you to the one and only Mr. Corey Ring of Cigar Box Battle. He's co-owner and content manager, editor, and gaming guru. Corey, how are you?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
I am as giddy as a schoolgirl.
Well, it's going to be great. It's always you know, we've never met in person, but I feel we've chatted a lot, obviously, and I've known you for some years, and I feel like I know you very well. And it's just, I love listening to your podcast and all the great guests. I enjoyed Things from the Basement recently, the Lego show, and all great episodes. So I'm just honored to be here with you and your listeners.
I am just thankful that anyone tunes in. That's going to sound peculiar, but I'm just happy that anyone else is happy to listen and see what goes on. And I'm grateful for it, really, because there's so much else you can be doing, right? You can be, you know, playing a game, you could be watching TV, taking a nap, whatever. People who are choosing to tune in, that is such a big choice because time is valuable. We only have so much of it. And
it is. But I found that gamers are great multitaskers. Mm-hmm. And if you're like me, I a lot of times I'm painting, listening to your podcast, or I'm driving, listening to the podcast, or I'm there's always something else going on. So I'm sure most gamers are the way. I bet you a lot of gamers are just when they listen to this, they're probably painting away or building a model or putting some MDF together. Doing something hobby related. Absolutely.
Do you know what that this was nowhere near my talking points for today, but do you know what the number one complaint is that I get about the podcast? And it's been the same for years.
I have no idea.
It's not long enough.
It's not long enough.
People seem to enjoy when they're 2 or 3 or 4 hours long. And I mean, I used to do long ones. And we have an episode coming out. By the time people listen to us talking, it will already have been out. But with Henry Hyde, formerly of Battle Games Magazine, but the Wargaming Compendium, the Wargames campaigns, and just tons of stuff. Amazing. Yeah.
He's a great guy.
But when he and I were recording, I had a hard stop, which I usually don't have, but I had some family obligations after. And so I reminded him, don't forget, Henry, we're only talking for an hour. And I could see in his face, he goes, And when we were done, he said, normally we just talk for like 2 or 3 hours. And even then it's not enough time. I said, I know, this was weird. So like, we were jamming it in.
Oh yeah.
And I used to say, like with him, I would just wind him up and let him go like an Energizer bunny, until one day someone told me, you realize that's not a good thing over in England to wind someone up. So I got a little education and I tried to stop using him.
But that's awesome. Yeah. No, he's right.
People do all sorts of stuff while they're listening, and this music, watching TV, whatever you can do.
That's right. That's right.
This is kind of off the beaten path, but what other kind of stuff do you listen to? You said you like to listen to this while you're working or painting, whatever. What other cool things do you like?
Well, you know, I'd say Little Wars TV is pretty,
good.
Yeah. They're good. And then some of the, you know, I've kind of followed some other podcasts, or I guess you call them YouTube channels, from them as well. Right. So like the Plunder Den. You know, I love the, you know, some of the terrain he makes. He's playing Blood and Plunder, and you know, some of it's just fantastic. So I love watching his as well. So just podcasts and anything really hobby related, and then just history. You know, I love every once in a while just like listening to some history. I'm like most gamers. That's one thing I love about the hobby. I've been a gamer like you for pretty much all my life, and we're all pretty similar. I mean, for the most part, you know, we're kind of cut from the same cloth. You know, we love toy soldiers, we love history, we love books and movies. And, you know, even if we're historical gamers, we all love Lord of the Rings, you know, that falls into historical gaming usually.
Of course.
So, yeah. but you know, we're all kind of cut from the same cloth. It's like almost being in a fraternity. So, you know, some of my closest friends are the gamers I've had, different cities I've lived in and gaming clubs. So just what a great hobby, you know?
It's so welcoming too. Talk about a group of individuals. Like, we might not agree about rules or how many dice to roll for something, whatever, but if you just want someone to welcome you and be friendly and open, I've never met kinder people in my life.
Sure. Walk up to the table, roll dice. Let's do this. Let's put the lead on the table. Let's roll some dice, you know, and everybody's welcome. So it's just a great hobby. And I always tell my wife, she complains from time to time, oh, you're going to go gaming or you're spending money on this. I said, hey, look, I could be a golfer or a hunter or something. That's more expensive and even more time consuming. I mean, just jokingly, but
true though.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of expensive hobbies out there and things that, you know, I just think it's a great hobby. Of course, I'm biased. We're biased, but
true. Yeah. No, but you're right. There are definitely worse ways to spend your time and your money. I mean, the age old one is, you know, you're gonna be spending your time in a casino or a pub. But I mean, for example, my former co-host Adrian, he was a big amateur photographer, and the money that went into that, oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, yeah. Most hobbies are super expensive. I don't care if you're a bowler or what you're doing. So, you know, when we're looking at our hobby, it's really not that bad, you know?
No, not really in the scheme of things.
No, not in the big scheme of things. You know, maybe except minus Games Workshop. Right? Little pricey there. But
what is going on there? I mean, that's a whole series of podcast episodes worth right there.
It is. They're producing a lot of great stuff lately. I mean, there's some neat box games coming out, but they're definitely not giving that stuff away. So
no, you're right. The things look beautiful, the models look great and everything, but
yeah.
It was expensive when I used to do it back in the day. Oh, I don't know how anyone affords it now.
Yeah, quite pricey, that's for sure.
Which is exactly polar opposite of what you do with Cigar Box Battle, because I think your products are downright affordable.
We try to keep up. We, you know, we've avoided price increases. At our costs, I mean, I'll be honest with you, if you're in business, you know, costs are going up, right? But mm-hmm. We're trying to hold our price. The thing about Cigar Box is it's really a hobby business. It's more of a love, as long as we're not losing money, you know, kind of thing. But we started it. So Chris Ward and I started it really as a way to just, let's sell some things on mats on the side and give us a little hobby money to buy miniatures and dice and books and source material, things like that. And it does that. And it's grown a little more than that. It's just the two of us, and it's a part-time job. You know, we have real jobs that, you know, mm-hmm. We're both in the business world, and you know, Cigar Box is something. You know, I get home from my real job and key in some orders. Print some mats. Chris is more on the design side, so he's working on some things. It's something that's kind of just we do it because we like it. That's the easiest way to say it. We love what we do, and we're not trying to drive Ferraris based on what we're earning from Cigar Box Battle. Yeah, but you know, it buys some miniatures from time to time for us, right? So that's what
A nice thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the approach I take with the podcast. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, you know, you don't podcast. Well, what's that going to do? You just turn it out. I've scaled it back a lot and been able to kind of streamline. And there's a lot of people who help with the process, but it's kind of like a hobby business, so to speak, too. And
right, right.
A lot of money to take to keep it going. And
oh, yeah,
work, like, sure. During my lunch hour, you know, I'm working on stuff or at home.
Oh, absolutely.
I have a kid in my lap and I have my phone trying to put stuff in. Can you do this? Let's schedule this or that or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it, right?
Absolutely. That's why it's a hobby. It's fun.
You talked about the company. So why don't, actually, before we talk about the company growing, what is Cigar Box Battle? Because there's going to be someone out there who hasn't heard of you because they've lived under a rock in the middle of Gibraltar or something. What is Cigar Box Battle? What do you do? And why are you amazing?
So simply put, well, I don't know if we're amazing, but thank you.
You are.
But we designed battle mats. So they're fleece battle mats. Battle mats are nothing new. I know as a kid, I had I'd go to a model train store and buy that. Remember those grass mats you could roll out? Yeah. You know, and put your, you know, I had a train as a kid, and then I use that for wargaming. So, but we, really kind of how it started is, a friend of mine would paint scenarios, very specific historical scenarios on a tarp. And, I always thought it was a great idea. So he could say, hey, we're going to play this scenario, usually historical scenario. And he could just throw it on the table, mm-hmm. throw some trees on it, some buildings. And we were playing in minutes. His name was Bob Freeman. He's a mentor of mine. He's since passed away.
I'm so sorry.
But what a great guy. Definitely, you know, everybody has kind of that one gaming mentor, and he was a mentor of mine. But, he just that was kind of his idea, was, you know, quick setup. And his stuff, you know, it looked horrible, I'll be honest with you. You know, I mean, you know, it was, you know, the rivers were bright blue. I mean, the roads were just brown. You know, he would just take about an inch wide paintbrush and just quickly paint these things on. But once he layered it with fences and trees and buildings, it really popped and it was eye catching. I think you can kind of imagine what I'm describing. And you know, so actually I had Howard Whitehouse kind of do the first prototype for Cigar Box. Yeah. And so I sent him a sketch and I said, hey, can you do this? And he did it on felt. I still have it. It was part of the Battle of Chickamauga for the ACW.
Okay.
But same thing, I would layer it with terrain and put books underneath it for hills. And then, oddly enough, it was John Hill of Squad Leader and Johnny Reb fame that kind of really encourages, hey, you guys like should do this professionally, you know, like you should do these professionally, you know. With me, I'm kind of a business guy. Chris is a graphic designer, and we met him at NashCon, and he really encouraged us to do it. And so, so we did it. So we designed some mats, and the first ones I graphed them out, just drew them out on paper, and Chris would design them. And we had a printer friend that would print them for us. And kind of the rest is history. It just grew from there. And then we needed a website, and we needed to make it official and become an LLC. And it just, you know how that works. It just kind of grew into this thing. So
one thing after another.
Yeah. So with their fleece battle mats, what we like, well, what people tell us that they like about them is that you can fold them up, put them in a backpack, take it to your friend's house, take it to a convention, gaming store, throw some trees. Well, actually, you could put anything underneath the mat. So some people use old geohacks. I mean, you could put a t-shirt under there, old socks. I've got a friend, Norris. He uses bags of sand and laundry detergent under there to create hills.
That's smart.
Yeah, you know, and he just keeps those in like a little shoebox. And, you know, to create the hills, so you get these nice rolling, you know, three-dimensional hills, and then you just layer it with trees and fences. And what we found is most people can set up a really sharp-looking game at a convention pretty quickly. I've timed myself. Like, for last NashCon, I think it took me, you know, 15 minutes. I mean, fast. What, you know, because I remember the days of lugging terrain boards and then just storing the terrain boards. I had an attic full of terrain boards. Nothing wrong with terrain boards. You know, I love terrain boards, and hats off to those guys that can and girls that can create beautiful 3D terrain boards. But I just don't have the room to store that, and I really don't have the talent to create them. But, you know, Cigar Box, like, I can store them in my closet, stack them up, and just throw them on a table and quickly set up a game. So that was kind of the whole, you know, inspiration was gamers that just want to have a simple, quick setup to run great looking games at their gaming store, their house, conventions. That was the whole concept, really. And it's grown from, you know, we started with a couple mats. Now, you know, we have a catalog of, you know, 100 plus mats and different sizes. So it's really grown. We just keep adding mats.
Do you, this is completely bizarre, but do you know what my favorite thing is about your mats?
What's that?
And you probably don't remember this, but from the early days of your company,
I think I know what you're going to say here.
I think you do too. I love how soft they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I have a picture of you like wrapped in a blanket.
Yeah, I think you do. Because I tell you, so my kids love them, and they're always stealing them to use blankets.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife is worried, oh, they're going to ruin your blanket. No, don't worry, because they're machine washable.
That's right.
It is okay. But I love just like, so I keep one in the car. Just in case, but also in case, like if I get cold in the winter, if I'm stuck somewhere, I get a blanket.
And oh, yeah.
But then it's a cool blanket, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I've been trying to convince my wife that maybe we should use one as a top blanket on our bed. And I've been trying for years and I haven't got it anywhere. But someday I will succeed. And it'll be there. I bet I could play a war game on there. And I won't be able to sleep in it. But like...
You know, we've had some, well, there's always somebody at convention I see like in the lobby on the couch or a chair, you know, kind of cuddling one of the blankets late at night, right?
That's so good.
And then I, there's another thing, you know, some of the designs are pretty interesting, even for non-war gamers. We had somebody contact and say they love the ocean mat, just the design of it. And their wife wanted to turn it into like a skirt or a scarf, something along those lines. And
that's cool.
They were able to do it because, you know, you could, I think they took it and had somebody alter it and just turn it into like a skirt, but they love the color of it and they love the design of it so much. So just some neat things. I've toyed with having like a suit made out of one of them. I thought that'd be kind of funny to wear to a convention, you know, rolling with like a suit
with hilarious.
Yeah. With fields and roads on it or something. But, You know, just want to have fun with it.
So I actually counted the other day because this is what I do. And you have 143 different designs. 24 of them are 36 by 36 inches. Two are 6.5 feet by 15 feet. I think these are some of your newest ones. And then you have 117 that are 4 by 6 foot plus. And that's on top of your double-sided 4 by 6 plus satin fleece.
That's right. And we also have one thing that we came up with a crazy idea. Nobody asked for this, but we actually have circular mats. You know, you think about
right.
it. Yeah. Cause so a lot of people forget about those, but, a lot of hotels and restaurants, bars, you know, the tables are circular, and we came up with this idea, hey, let's make some mats that would fit those. So we actually have not all designs, but some of the designs, I'd call them some of the core designs, have a circular mat option. And I'm telling you, playing on a circular table, it doesn't seem like it'd be a big change, but, it adds kind of a different dynamic to the game, right? Where you don't, have those, you know, kind of that standard 6x4 board, rectangular mm-hmm. board you're playing on, you know, make great encounters, things like musket and tomahawks or a bold action scenario or capture the crossroads. You can have a lot of fun on a circular table. Just something different, but we have circular mats. We actually have some 2x2 mats. I think we pulled those off the website though. There just wasn't a lot of demand for 2x2.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen those, but yeah, I forgot about the 60-inch circular ones.
Yeah, yeah, and those, and then we have something new coming out, which is a 5x4 mat. So we had a lot of requests for like a 4x4, you know, mm-hmm. for skirmish games like Saga, Clash of Spears. You know, we love Clash of Spears here, just smaller games, right? You know, just and so we're going to announce it here on the show. We've put some on social media, but we haven't. You're the first podcast that we're going to talk about this, but
woo-hoo.
You know, yeah, yeah. So it's going to be we're doing a Kickstarter, and it's going to start really 1st of September. At least that's the target. We're almost there. We have a few loose ends, but we still have plenty of time, a few weeks left, and they're going to be 5x4 mats. Which gives you really, you know, that 4x4 surface plus some, right? Some extra room if you want to have hills underneath, or I always like to have a little staging area at the back, you know, mark off 4x4, you know, drop a couple pebbles and have that staging area for your casualties and your markers or whatever. But they're going to be smaller mats. So it's going to be a cheaper price, right? Which will be nice. I think, you know, everybody works hard for their money. And so we're actually going to drop the price on those. You know, they're basically just a foot shorter, but we're going to drop the price significantly on them. And we're going to have a lot of great new designs. We've got a new Martian design. We've got a new, like a gas planet. There's some, and there'll be some other surprises. We actually are working on some mats right now that we're going to have done or try to have done for the Kickstarter. So lots of classic mats, just in a new size, and lots of great price, and lots of new mats coming too as stretch goals. So, you know, look for that Kickstarter coming soon. But and the smaller mats are nice too, because again, they just fold up, fit in your backpack, travel light. And not everybody wants a 6x4. We actually did that based on feedback we were getting from people. They're like, I don't really need a 6x4. Do you do a 4x4? Well, we're not doing a 4x4. It's really a 5x4. But you know, it's going to save that same purpose for those smaller skirmish type games. The old, you know, the Wild West game. You know, mm-hmm. Boot Hill or. Like I said, you know, maybe, you know, some of the, or Games Workshop, right? Some of the Necromunda stuff, Ash True. Race, but anything that's a skirmish game, I think that they'll play very well on that smaller surface.
Legion.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, there's a lot of games that, would work great for that. You don't need a 6x4, you know?
No, that makes sense. I mean, I had wondered, oh, you know, why aren't there 4x4 mats? And then I didn't really think anything of it, but it makes more sense to not do a 4x4, to go a little bit bigger. And that's kind of why I think, right, why you do your 6x4 plus, so it gives a little extra room for when you do elevation and things like that.
Right. We just call that wiggle room. Yeah. So it just gives you a little extra. You can basically put it on a 6x4 board. That's kind of the concept, and get some drape and still have hills underneath. Right. So it'd be the same with the 4x4s. How I'm going to use it, I'm probably going to put it on a 4x4 board and have the overhang, or I'll throw it on a 6x4 table. And like I said, just use that extra space on the table and the extra space on the mat just for dice and, you know how gamers are, drinks and, you know, just all that stuff, the non-gaming essential stuff, right. Or markers, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the concept, and we can basically do the 5x4 at the same price as the 4x4. So just, I thought it just made sense to just do,
oh wow,
you know, put the extra material on there. Yeah.
That is awesome. I think I need one of these.
Well, we'll take care of you. We'll definitely take, we'll send you a sample. All right.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, just let us know us when you want. We'll send you a sample. I know you're. I heard. Well, I know because you told me that you're working on some Lego wargaming.
Yeah. So you thankfully helped me out with some questions and things to help me pick out a mat to get. Nordic Winter, I believe, is the one that I ended up getting.
Yeah, that's a nice one because it has some rocky kind of texture to it and a lot of snow and yeah.
Beautiful. It's just a gorgeous mat. Well, and thank you. So much depth in it that you don't really expect from anything that's 2D, but it has it. But yeah, so the plan is to do part of the Battle of Hoth or a version of it using Lego.
I love it. I know we've talked offline about that, but I think really, you know, wargaming with Lego and role-playing games with Lego is kind of underserved. You know, I've seen some Rangers of Shadowdeep with Lego, which was awesome. I've seen some, you know, I mean, why not? I love what you're doing, you know? Battle of Hoth with Lego. I think it'll be awesome.
There's a lot of possibilities to do with it, and I think it's something that would appeal to kids. I'm all about trying to make wargaming more accessible to those who it's not, because I mean, let's be honest, we're a very welcoming group of people, but the bar of entry is set so high, it's really hard and it's so confusing for people. So I think if we can try to make it easier on people to try to get in, and what better way than to appeal to children and those who can play well with children. So you kind of get that going and you then turn it into more of a family thing, which I think just, it works. It has a lot of benefits for people. So trying to do that. But the downside is doing it with Lego makes it astronomically expensive. So trying to find ways to do it all so that it doesn't completely go crazy. I've already gone crazy on the expenses, but so it doesn't really go crazy on the expenses, but also so that it fits, right? Because you don't want to be having a bunch of Lego on the table, right? And then you have all these like really ornate table scatter train and all this kind of stuff, because it doesn't fit. So I was trying to figure out what makes the most sense to use. I'm thinking, do I just put anything on the table? Like, how am I going to? And it's snow, so what do I do with that? And there's elevation in the snow, but like, what do you do and how do you? And then I instantly thought of you. And I said, aha, there has to be something. What is that something that would work for this? And it just would be perfect because of the things you had mentioned, how you can put stuff underneath so you can add elevation, but it still makes it a uniform kind of look, but then can also put stuff on top so that you can either have added elevation that way, but can it also have other features? And what other features would I use? Because it's a snow planet. I'm not going to put trees.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, but for any Star Wars fan who's seen Empire Strikes Back, you know, there were no trees to be seen. So what do I do? I needed something that would make it look interesting. Again, you're Matt. Yeah, but also that would have like an impact on the gameplay. So the mat's going to be the thing. And when I talked about it with a buddy who's going to be helping me with all this, I told him what I was going to do. And he's like, okay, but which mat? And I sent him a picture and he instantly just replied and said, that's perfect.
Yeah. That's I can't wait to see it. I've heard about the AT-ATs, your speeders. I know I've heard you talk about what you're building up. I think it's going to be awesome. Looking forward to seeing the pictures.
I'm looking to my right because there's so much stuff on my game. I can't use my game table because that's where all the stuff is right now. And it's ridiculous. I think I'm up to 250 Lego people. So far. Oh God, it's so bad.
It's what was the expression? It's hell being a collector, right?
Yes.
It really is. It really is. Yeah. But it's gonna be great. You'll have a lot of fun with it.
I'm already working on ideas for other games to use with Lego and thinking of other mats of yours that would be useful for these other games. one of which would be a skirmish game. And so I'm intrigued by the Kickstarter and to see what designs are gonna be in there and what new stuff's coming.
Yeah, well, let us know. I'm always kind of curious as what you're cooking up, you know, and I'm sure you'll come up with something. And I can guarantee there's some kind of math that'll work. If you're in the jungle or the desert, I'm sure we can figure something out. So
do you know what? That's one of the wonderful things about your catalog. There is not only something for everyone, but there's more than one that fits almost any purpose. And so no matter what someone's looking for, the hard part is choosing, because it's not just like, oh, well, there's this one that fits because I'm doing a whatever. There's two or three or four, and which one fits it the best? Which one speaks to you?
That's right. And yeah.
I think it's personal preference more than anything, to be honest.
It is. It's just like walking into an ice cream shop, you know, what flavor do you want? You know, that's kind of
all of them.
That's right.
You want them all.
But yeah, that took some time, obviously. You know, I remember we first started and it was grass. We had grass and desert and snow. Just exactly what you would think. You know, we had a water mat and a desert mat and a grass mat. And then it just kept expanding. And, you know, and people make a lot of great suggestions. So, hey, how about a fall mat? That's actually probably one of our biggest suggestions. And I think we have some mats that would work for fall, but we don't really specifically have like a fall mat with like brown leaves on the ground. So that's something we might do. We've had a request for basically kind of a like think like Clash of Katanas or Test of Honor. So like a Japanese theme, like think Japan in spring. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, that kind of imagery. So a mat like that. And from time to time we get a lot of requests for specific battles and things like that. Obviously those don't sell as well. I mean, if you want some obscure English Civil War battle, you know, I mean, it might work as a generic mat. We do some of those. Like we have Battle of Nashville, and a lot of people, I'd say most people, or really nobody, uses it for the Battle of Nashville. They you know, they're fighting Virginian War on it, or they're fighting, you know, they're playing Team Yankee, or they're doing and multiple scales. That's another thing too. So that mat, like that's a great example. The Nashville mat was designed really for 15 millimeter figures.
Yeah.
So in 15 millimeter, the roads are about an inch wide or so. That's a regiment marching down the road. But if you play it in 25 millimeter, it becomes a trail through the woods, right? You know, just the scale change. So I just love seeing, you know, the creativity. What people do with the mats, I could never have envisioned, you know? And so it's, for me, that's the neat part, is just kind of seeing what people do with the mats that we really never even thought about, you know?
That's how you know you hit something really well, when people take what you did and they come up with something you never thought of, and it's amazing.
Never saw it coming, and it's just amazing, you know. They did an underwater, we don't have an underwater mat, but when you think about it, some of the mats could be the basis for like an underwater scenario, you know. And they added they built it up somehow and put boats on the top, and they had divers, and they had reefs, and had all this aquarium kind of terrain in there. It looked fantastic. So
that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I thought that was a really neat idea. You know, a little submarine cruising through. And so that was kind of a neat idea. And I never would have thought of that. You know, I'm just more, you know, put some trees, put some houses out there, and you know, let's roll some dice. So not as creative, but you know, and then also one thing, a lot of role players. So that wasn't really our target audience. I am a role player. I started off, that was one of my first loves, really, was, you know, early D&D and role playing, and then kind of moved from there actually more into historical wargaming. Always love history, but we've you know, we've had a lot of role players that are using the mats now. You've probably seen a lot of, you know, from Dwarven Forge to, there's been kind of a movement for more, I don't want to say less theater of the mind, but definitely more physical representation of the dungeon or what you're going through. So we've had a lot of role players contact us, and they want specific things like, hey, can you do a cavern mat, or can you do this or that? And, you know, that's really cool. You know, it's kind of neat to see that kind of come alive, the role playing side of it.
It's funny you mentioned Dwarven Forge, actually, because way back, because it's like 6 years ago, maybe, they were getting ready to do a Kickstarter. And so I know the founder of Dwarven Forge. It's weird. So I know him, and I know his operations manager and a bunch of the staff over there. And they were getting ready to do this Kickstarter for this whole new thing they're going to do. And one of the big things they were going to have in it was something they call a terrain tray, which is basically much smaller, rigid, and turns out to be magnetic, but at the time I didn't know that, basically battle mat. And so they were telling me about it, and I said to them, so you want to make a smaller version of what Cigar Box Battle does? Why would you do that? Just tell people to buy from Cigar Box Battle and do what you do, and you do it really well, like do your thing. Why would you expand? And it didn't make any sense to me. But clearly they had been getting people asking, will you do a thing because we want a thing? And
yeah.
So they've kind of pivoted too. So they like to refer to it as negative space. So they'll have these terrain trays, basically, which are, it turns out they're magnetic. So it works because a lot of the pieces are magnetic now. So that people put on for when they're either to set up, or to actually have like a whole section that they pre-built and just kind of fly in for doing role-playing games. And it's something I'd never really thought would be huge. I was like, just get some felt or buy Cigar Box Battle or whatever, you know, just go do, why do you need this other thing? And they put a unique twist on it, which I thought was kind of neat. And for me, it doesn't do much of anything, but I can kind of see why it does for other people. I still think they should just get a cigar box
battle. Well,
but
funny you mentioned that, because they actually did back one of our Kickstarters.
Did they?
So they don't use our mats, you know, in their, with their product, so to speak. Right. But I think they do use our mats when they're playing in their own games. They must. I mean, they backed one of our Kickstarters, and also I'm not going to mention any names, but we've had a lot of, I'd call them, you know, kind of big names in the role playing world, you know, order from us. And that's really cool to see, you know, some of the names I remember from, you know, being a kid, right. You know, maybe listed in one of the books or something like that. So it's really kind of cool to see that.
I have connections to some of those people, and that doesn't surprise
that's
me.
That's awesome. Yeah, they're just, you know, running role playing games. So it's awesome. And you know, from Call of Cthulhu to D&D to I mean, really anything. I guess you could run, you know, RuneQuest, but as anything that, you know, has terrain. So and the Dwarven Forge stuff is awesome.
It's beautiful.
I don't have any. I'd love to get some. I need to get some. I played it in a game recently, although it was funny. This was at a convention, and it was this guy set up this beautiful layout, and you know, the beautiful dungeon with Dwarven Forge. Yeah. And there were like 12 players, which I thought was a lot, you know, like, hey, what, that's a lot, you know? So, and I think we were running like first or second level characters through this dungeon. And the DM, I didn't know this at the time, but he was just savage. This guy was a savage. So it was designed intentionally to be kind of like a, I guess you call it like a dungeon crawl, but / death trap kind of dungeon.
Oh, so like Tomb of Horrors?
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, I think, like, we walked into the hallway, and, like, I was, you know, and it was, like, really, you couldn't even do anything. It was, like, a banshee came out, or I forget what it was, and it was, like, all right, everybody make a saving throw, and so, you know, out of the 12 people, we roll our D20s, and basically, if you failed, you were dead, or you're out of the game. You were paralyzed, out of the game. Whoa. So, it, like, the 12 people right there, like, half of them, all right, we'll see you later, you know, I mean, it was, like, room one, and we were out, but probably not a great way to run a convention game, but you know, the takeaway there was that the terrain was inspirational. It was beautiful. The miniatures were beautiful. You know, definitely something I'd like to do, although obviously I'd run the game a little different, but, it was just a beautiful game. So love the Dwarven Forge stuff.
They have a Kickstarter coming up in the nearish future, as well, for some new stuff. And actually they did, they released some wargaming focused terrain. One of their individuals had reached out to us for input on it, so we had some input on how they were going about to craft some of that kind of stuff, which was neat.
Oh wow.
For what they did. But I'm very lucky. Way back, the owner had sent tons of Dwarven Forge to me for review, and so I have this collection. Not as big as a lot of people, but it's a lot of stuff.
That's nice.
It's gorgeous. And so for me, a common thread with gaming for things that I like, and this holds true for what you do, is it has to be not only family friendly for play, but it has to be able to withstand the usage of my kids. And so, like, I can toss whatever the Dwarven Forge stuff at them and they can play. It doesn't matter. They do whatever with it. And I can do the same thing with your battle mats. And I'm like, here we go. And it doesn't matter what happens because it's durable. It lasts and it's fine. So if it's kid safe and kid friendly, that's going to win me over.
Awesome. Well, I've got three boys and they've grown up around wargaming, and yeah, they've just, Actually, they, you know, I taught them to be gentle with the miniatures. You could always teach them that. And they would play with my miniatures, set these big battles. The only thing they really ever destroyed, remember the big, I bought, you could buy them at Walmart and Target years ago, big 54mm World War II tanks.
Yes.
And yeah, they just destroyed that stuff. That got played with rough. But, well, when I say destroyed, but there's just a lot of missing pieces. But, yeah, you know, it was great. They've grown up around gaming and just, I would say they're not gamers. So they're not painting and collecting miniatures. But the neat thing about having, you know, three boys of grown up gaming, if I set up a game, I say, hey, I'm gonna set up a Civil War game or a Napoleonic game. I mean, they're all in. They'll play it, they'll love it, they'll have a great time. And then they'll move on, you know, and go then they go to computer gaming, and then they're on the Xbox or whatever. But it's a lot of fun. And we do some family games. I have one son off in college, but when he comes home, we'll set, you know, Thanksgiving break, we'll usually set up a game and Napoleonics. We were doing kind of an odd period of points, but 1806 Prussian, so early Napoleonic. So Prussians, French, Saxons, kind of like Jena. So that area where the Prussian army was defeated in 1806, right? So I actually painted up the order of battle for a smaller battle, Saalfeld. So I have it battalion by battalion. And we'll play that, and they have a lot of fun with it. And just you know, it's it just makes for a great, what we'd like to do is play a few turns, leave it set up, and then come back to it, you know, tomorrow, and then play a couple mm-hmm. turns, come back. So the game might run a week, right? But it's kind of fun. And a lot of the fun happens in between the game turns where they're kind of trash talking, or you see them, they'll walk in and kind of look and kind of strategize, you know, what move they're going to make. And it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, that's hilarious. Mine tends to be, so mine are young enough that everything's a baby and everyone's a family or friends or whatever, which I know is very stereotypical and sexist, but that's how they play. So that's how I play with them. So I'll put a game mat down or whatever. And there was one day I put Dwarven Forge terrain down on top of one of your mats, and there was a bunch of like dark caverns, and no, it was someone's house, and like over near the little cesspool was where the baby slept, and like we had to go here and here was the kitchen, but then they had to go and build a bathroom because my kids love bathroom humor, and so like they had to go find a bathroom, and it was behind the rickety thing where the dead goblin was, and you went over this side of the mat, and it just this is what they did.
That sounds great. Yeah, what imaginations. I love it. Yeah,
I mean, so many ways to play, right?
Yeah, let them run with it. Exactly. There's no wrong way to do it, really. No. You know, so it's just if they're having fun, that's great. That's great that your girl's like that. Yeah, I'd say try maybe get them in when they're a little older. Try a role playing game. I bet they'd like it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've wondered about like Tales of Equestria, because my eldest likes My Little Pony. So
yeah,
that's a My Little Pony themed one where you're all friends and you work together, and there's coloring that happens, and so,
right.
Like, no one dies or gets like hurt, really. It's more about the storytelling and cooperative kind of play, which is a good thing, I think, to do.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, that's amazing. When you think of Cigar Box Battle, what's one mistake, maybe mistake's not the right word, one learning situation that just kind of really changed the way that you do what you do?
We learned a lot. I mean, we made a lot of mistakes. We made all the mistakes you can make. You know, we're just lucky we weren't trying to, you know, live off of it, right? But, you know, just, you know, from maybe, you know, I probably would have put more focus on trying to maybe wholesale or retail, which we don't really do that. We see ourselves as kind of a boutique business where we just, you know, in order to keep our prices low, we kind of, you know, that keep, so we don't really have that middle, that way they cut out the middleman, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we don't really have many distributors, you know, but I'd say maybe if I had to go back in time, I might focus more, you know, or at least make a more of an effort to get, you know, packaging and get into some retail stores and things like that. But we're happy where we're at right now, but we learned a lot. I mean, from just the material to the size, to some of the colors, you know, and we've had a lot of problems. I mean, you know, printing's a whole, there's shrinkage sometimes mm-hmm. there's with the fabric there's just a margin of error, you know, 5%, so that the mat, some mats might be a little bigger, some might be a little smaller. I mean, there's just different, there's so many things, and I'm not a printing expert, so I can't really speak to that, but we're lucky we have some friends that are in that business, but you know, there's so many things we could have done differently, but it's worked out fine, you know. Really no regrets or anything like that. You know, there's some mats I wish I would have done. You know,
which one?
Well, just kind of selfishly, like pretty much any battle I'm interested in, I'm like, man, we should do a mat. And then I'm like, no one will buy this, you know, like no one will, the Battle of Peachtree Creek or something, you know, some kind of an obscure, you know, Civil War battle. You know, again, we might sell a few mats, but probably nobody's gaming the Battle of Peachtree Creek, right? I'd probably be the only one doing that.
Well, for the name alone, I think you should do it. That's just a great name.
It is a great name. Yeah. But you know, or just pretty much any just weird battle, or you know, I've like, oh, we should do a mat for that. But it probably not the best you know, business idea, so to speak.
No, probably not.
We've done some large mats. You mentioned those. That's kind of something new. We did these 6.5 feet by 15 feet mats, and we have a Waterloo and we have a Gettysburg. We did Gettysburg first, and we said, well, if Gettysburg sells okay, because they are a little pricey. They're a little pricey, but mm-hmm. we really don't make as much money on them. I mean, it's just expensive to print. I mean, printing's really gone up. I mean, even just paper printing. But but it did sell well. So we were like, well, let's do Waterloo. So we did Waterloo. And we also are going to release kind of just a generic grassland, you know, because we've had requests for that. Like, hey, can you do this? But I don't want the roads and I don't want the fields. I just want, you know, I have a huge, super huge table in my basement, and this will be perfect for it. So we are going to release just a kind of a green grassland mat in that size. Now, those mats are made of a slightly different material. Most of our mats are made of fleece because of the size and the cost and not having to, and having that in one piece. So those are one large piece, right? So it's a slightly different material. It's not significantly different. You can do everything, put the heels underneath, but it's just a slightly, I guess you call it a slightly lighter. It works great. But it is a slightly different material. It's kind of the same material we make the Ranger to Shadow deep mats out of. Yeah, it's a slightly thinner material. But yeah, those are, and we might do more if those are, well, we've got a lot of requests for those, right? But, you know, hey, do this mat, I'll do that, but do Quattro Bra, do, you know, and we might get around to some of those, but no promises.
My one personal regret with the Waterloo one is the timing. I wish you came out with it 5 years ago.
Okay.
The whole reason it's a selfish one is like for many gamers, Waterloo was the most beloved battle of my former co-host and friend Adrian, and he always wanted to do a Waterloo game. And I was not, and still I'm not really a big Napoleonics person. But he was always like, you know, we'll get the stuff, we'll go do the game. And I was like, you find a mat, you find a thing that we can go and do it, and we'll go do it. And we never did. But if this was around, he would have turned me around.
Yeah, Adrian, great guy. I say, I never met him, but I, you know, just I remember talking to him and, you know, listening to him on the podcast and just a lot of, again, just a great gamer. I remember, you know, you talking about him playing the Gettysburg game, right? Yeah. Or Squad Leader. And, you know, I've got all those games. And I, you know, you talking about him, it just, I can, it was so relatable. And, you know, he sounds, again, I know he's a great guy, but it just, you know, what a great guy. Definitely sorely missed, I can tell. You know, everybody that talks about him, I love how things from the basement, Jörg Bender did his, you know, the USS Adrian Benson.
I got it right next to
me. Ironclad. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what a fantastic tribute. And that is a cool model. I love York stuff, the things from the basement. I mean, that's one guy I need to talk to a little bit about doing a collaboration. And because we love to collaborate.
So talented.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, maybe we could do something that kind of fits his buildings or something like that. But I'd love to talk, I'll reach out to him about doing some kind of, I think that'd be a neat idea. As, you know, I know I think he's working on some, like a medieval or just a German, some German buildings, I believe he said.
Yeah, he's going to be doing some German buildings. And right now, he's out in Texas and he's been looking at some Civil War stuff. So I'm wondering what new Civil War things he's, I can always kind of tell what he's going to be doing based off where his travels,
Travels taking him. Yeah. Well, hey, you get inspiration where you can find it. Right. So yeah, I love it. Yeah. Maybe we'll see some ironclads from him or something. I know he's on the Cairo. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was looking at that. I was texting him the other day. I was like, so what else are you looking at? What are you
gonna did he go by the Alamo? Cause that's, an Alamo might be fun.
No, I don't think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's been by there. I don't think, not yet anyway.
All right. Yeah, I need you to talk him into it. All right.
I can talk him. I'm like, hey, York, what are you doing? I was just talking. You won't believe who I was just talking to. We all say, you got to go and do this.
The Alamo, that'd be a great game, you know, a cigar box mat and his version of the Alamo on there. And, you know, that'd be a lot of fun.
Way back, I played a Battle of the Alamo game using Warhammer Historical's rules at Huzzah Convention up in Portland, Maine. This was, 9 years ago? Oh my God, I'm old. I think it was 9 years ago. That is so much younger than. It was a beautiful setup because they actually had the Alamo that was made out of, I don't know, like an old refrigerator styrofoam kind of thing.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It was beautiful had done with it. And it was the only time I've ever seen that. And I've never seen anything quite the same. But really, it'd be perfect to do out of MDF. And with the right mat under it, you could really just kind of maximize how things work.
Oh, yeah. Put a Rattlesnake Ranch under there. That was that kind of design for that. It's like a...
Yeah.
It's not really desert. It's got a little green in it. It's somewhat... It's more arid, I guess you'd say. But that would probably work well.
What rules would you use with this?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. You know, that's a tricky scenario. I mean, you really have to... It's kind of a foregone conclusion that the Mexicans are going to win. I think it's just more of a... how I would run it is how quickly, right? So, you know, more like turn. So how long can you hold them off, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe flip it and then, you know, have the, you know, have everybody switch sides and play it again and see who can, you know, hold out the longest or, but rules, I don't know, something fast and furious. I'd probably do something maybe even loosely based on like DBA or something where you're just,
oh, okay.
you know, hey, roll, drop a D6, and you know, you're either, you know, you're pulled off the wall, you're pushed back. It had to be something fast and furious. I think I wouldn't want to fight that with like Empire or, and don't get me wrong, I love Johnny Reb, but you know, something, you know, one of the older kind of tactical, yeah, you know, crunchy sets, that probably wouldn't be the way to go there. Something fast and furious. Have you seen the flats by Wofun?
No, so, I haven't.
So check that out. That might be a way to go. They actually have Alamo and Texas War of Independence figures, but they're two-dimensional figures. They're like flats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Stephen Huckabee, he's the guy that runs Raven Banner Games. He actually imports them into the U.S. They're a European company, but they're like, they're done by Peter Dennis. And
he sent me a bunch of his stuff a while back.
Okay.
Gorgeous. None of this, but it was Ship Spanish Armada, I think, and some other stuff. Just,
yeah. So imagine those printed on plexiglass. And so they're two-dimensional figures. They're like flats. So they're almost like the old German flats. But
I think I did hear something about this a while ago. And then I kind of, with everything going on, I kind of just couldn't keep up.
Yeah. So they're kind of trendy right now. They're pretty cool. And you could probably, I mean, you don't have to paint any figures, right? So you could just, buy them
over there.
Yeah. You just buy them. A lot of people flock the bases. You set them up and you, and you're gaming, you know? So I don't have any, I mean, I have a few samples, but I would consider doing something like that for what I would call a one-shot period, or maybe something where I don't want to paint like tartans, like do, you know, or juice something where like the Zulu Wars, where I don't want to paint, you know, 2000 Zulus. Right.
Oh, God,
so,
no.
Yeah. So, you know, something like that, I think that's the way to go with that. But anyway, check those out, and for your listeners, definitely check out the Wofun figure, the flats. Those are pretty neat. And I think they have them in 18 millimeter and 28. So I think they have them at least two different scales.
No, I think you might be right. We'll have a link in our show notes and we'll try to pop something up on social media for it too. That's interesting.
Tempted. I'll be honest with you. I've been tempted, especially I've been tempted with like English Civil War. So it's not really a period I would game a lot. And I don't really have a lot of interest in painting a lot of English Civil War stuff. But I mean, if I could buy some stuff that and just run some games, you know, and also that I think you can take them apart and they'll pack flat. I mean, talk about great storage, right? And just transport them. You could probably transport them in Tupperware, you know?
Well, so if anyone from Wofun or Peter Dennis is listening and wants to send some review product my way, this could be worth looking into. And then if York happens to do some, I don't know, some Alamo inspired terrain and you make an Alamo map, this could be a really cool whole sponsored game, actually.
We just all need to meet at a convention and do this, right? So, yeah.
We find a convention that'll sponsor the game, right?
Right.
And then each of your companies, I'm volunteering all of you.
That's right.
I'm just kind that way. I actually do bring people together.
Yeah, yeah.
And you all sponsor an aspect of it, and I promote it. We get a good game master. We get it going. And then this is what we do. You know, I laugh. Really awesome things have been started in sillier ways than this.
Well, we put it out there. Let's see what happens, right? Let's see.
We're in on the mats, right?
We're in on the mats. So you got us already. All right.
Okay. So that's one. First one's the hardest. Let's see what we can do with York. He'll be the next one. Come on, York.
Just need an Alamo. Yeah.
He would do such a great.
Oh, it'd be beautiful. His stuff's really, it's really nice. Really nice.
And I don't know if this holds true for you. I'm going to ask if it holds true for you, but for him, he has no actual like training or education, not the right way, but like licensed learning in how to do this kind of design or creation that he does for the MBF. He just does it. Do you have any of that? So I know you're not design side, but like, do you have a formal background?
No, I'm in business. I mean, my real job is with, you know, I have a real job and it's basically business management, I guess you call it. But, you know, but Chris is my partner, Scarbox. He does have a design background, but oddly enough, he's self-taught too. So I don't think he went to design school. I know he didn't. Chris actually studied, I think, music in college or music education. So he's a self-taught, I mean, he's a self-taught designer as well. So, but you know, I think a lot of that natural talent and people that are self-taught, I mean, there's something to be said for that, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I have a lot of musician friends, some of them are self-taught and they're just amazing, you know? So nothing wrong with that. There's probably a lot of advantages to it, you know? you know, you're not maybe limited by some of the things you learn in school. You know, everything's an option, right? At least that's how I would think about it. We're not really, you know, this kind of came about. This is probably just like this, like, you know, just me and Chris talking about, hey, let's start a hobby biz, you know, something in the hobby to generate a little extra income. And we thought the mats would be a good way to go. So
I'm really intrigued by, I'm going to group you into this, and you might not feel this way about yourself, but I'm really intrigued by the process that creatives use to create. So what is it like for Chris and you when you're going to create a new design, or you're coming up with a new product? How does it begin?
So I'll take you back to a couple of mats. So we have one, it's a tropical mat. Mm-hmm. And again, I'd say it was kind of selfish. Well, we were like, well, we need something tropical, you know, but I've always had an interest in the Spanish-American War. Okay. So I lived in Florida for years, you know, Seminole War, Spanish-American, anything Florida related, I find it fascinating. And a lot of the troops were stationed in the Tampa area that shipped off to Cuba. And, you know, so I wanted to do a San Juan Hill, basically, scenario.
Yeah.
And, but you know, but it was like, what I was thinking, what no one else is going to want to do San Juan Hill. I mean, what an obscure war, obscure battle, you know, but, so I drew, I got some books out and researched it and drew up by hand, a map of the Battle of San Juan Hill. And, then Chris took it, and basically Chris is really good with, you know, Adobe and different design programs. And he basically illustrated, you know, he illustrated it. And it's not exactly San Juan Hill. We call it based on San Juan Hill. We wanted to make it kind of generic. You know, we didn't include every little trail and every little aspect of the battle. But the general flow of the battle with the roads and the jungle is all there. And so that's usually where it starts. Originally, it just started with some drawings on the back of index cards or back of an envelope or postcard. And
wow,
from me to Chris, and then, you know, basically put into, you know, Chris would professionally design it. That's what he does for a living. And then we would have our printer print it for us. So nowadays, I draw less on the back of cards. Now it's just more of like, hey, you know, what about this? You know, what about we do a winter mat, or hey, what about we do a lava mat? And we just kind of talk about it would look like, and, you know, and I'd say Chris kind of takes the ball and runs with it. And we also do use a couple, sometimes we use a few other designers. Chris doesn't design every single mat. He designs the majority, but we've had people approach us, hey, I'd love to work with you guys, and we'll pay people, you know, to design mats. So if, hey, any designers out there, you know, we're always happy to talk. So, you know, if you have a great idea, but we, you know, and we love to support people in the hobby. So, you know, just that's kind of our process right now is, you know, more of, or somebody will send us an idea or message us, hey, I'd like to get this. And we just kind of take it and run with it from there. And our job's kind of easy too, because especially with historical battles, because there's just a lot of great, you know, maps, historical maps and research out there. So we basically just take that information and kind of, and run with it. So not over, too complex.
When you say you draw out, or you used to anyway, draw out the map, what do you use? Do you just grab like any old pen or pencil, or do you have a like, how do you go about it? Do you use tracing paper and trace over and then modify it, or like what is that
actually kind of like? What I was using, great question, but I just a piece of paper from my printer, and I always liked black, like a black, almost like a thin Sharpie, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and it really pops, just that black on white, and there's not much margin of error with the Sharpie, right? Mm-hmm. You can't really erase it, but you know, these were just rough drafts, right, to get to Chris in the old days. You know, that was probably 8 years ago, you know, 7-8 years ago. So that's all I use, just a piece of paper, Sharpie, and just kind of I would freehand it. I'm not a bad drawer though, so they didn't look horrible. I'm not a great drawer either, but they you know, you could look at it and tell, oh, okay, that's, you know, that's obviously there's roads and fields and trees in here, and kind of like an old D&D map, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you
know,
no,
I used to do you know, do that. So that's what the old kind of the old stuff looked like. Dean West was a gamer, and he Dean West has since passed away, very sad, but he drew something I really treasure. He had a hand-drawn map of the Battle of Champion Hill, which is a Civil War battle, part of the Vicksburg campaign. Mm-hmm. And which we later turned into a cigar. We have a cigar box battle Champion's Hill map, but but I have that original hand-drawn map from him, and I keep it,
oh,
you know, as a, I keep it as kind of really like a piece of artwork. It really is artwork. You know, he colored it and it was drawn to scale. It's really a beautiful piece of art. But the Champion Hill artwork was based off Dean's drawing. So we've had, like I said, we've had some other people contribute some things, and you know, it's been a great ride so far, and we just kind of want to see where this takes us. We just plan to keep adding designs. We might retire a few designs. We would announce that though. You know, if we decide there's some designs that, I mean, honestly, I think most people agree our mats are actually getting better. Some of our original designs are, you know, I'll just leave it there. So we're getting better, I think. So
you're adding more detail and layers, yes, to the onion.
Yes. Yeah. So as to be expected, though, you would hope we'd be getting better, not worse. Right. So.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting better. So some of the older designs, we actually might retire and just take them off the website. So we'll let everybody know. And maybe, you know, if we decide to do that, because, you know, one thing I've learned, too, with Cigar Box is no matter what design it is, it's somebody's favorite. Right. It might be the worst to me, the ugliest mat we have, but there's somebody in that, they love that mat and it's their favorite. We had an old space mat, and it was basically just a black mat with some white dots on it, you know, that represented stars.
I remember that one.
Yeah. And I think we've kind of retired that one.
I think
it's hard
to
find. Yeah. But I'm telling you, we have people request that mat all the time, you know. I almost feel bad selling it, you know. It's like, well, I'll usually give them a discount or something, but it's, you know, we have better space mats in my opinion now.
So I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask what you think the worst one is, because that's not fair. Some people would do that, but not me. But I am going to ask you, what is your favorite mat that you do?
I like the ones that Chris designed that have that are terrain heavy, so they have roads and fields on them, right?
Yep.
You know, that was kind of a risk for us. Nobody was doing that. So I would say that's one thing Cigar Box, we were definitely innovators in. Most people, there were a lot of companies that had mats, but there weren't many companies that were putting roads and fields on their mats because people felt, well, that's not really flexible. But what we've learned through other people is, you know, if you don't want a field, put a house on top of the field, right? Or if you don't want that field, put a tree on it. You know, you can change the mats. And the roads, I've seen some people add paved roads and cobblestone over that, or and use those as trails, or just disregard them entirely, you know, or get creative and turn it into a dried creek bed. Or, you know, I've seen so many people get creative that really, you know, we thought we were limiting people with the fields and the roads and things, and they're not really limited at all, you know, is what we found. They just do what they want. And, you know, but I'd say those are my favorite is, you know, I love to have friends over, and, you know, I'll put some mats out, and, you know, and I love the roads and I love the fields, and we'll put fences and hedges around them, and it just really pops. You know, the generic mats are great. I love those too. Probably 410 is my favorite there. That's that grassland too. It's kind of that darker green.
Yeah. That's a nice one.
Yeah. That's probably my favorite, for, as far as the generic grass mats. You know, and then probably 510.
I love that one.
Yeah. So 510 is the one that has roads and fields on it. Right. So some of those are my favorites. If you had to ask me, and there's others too. I love, we have, when Gangs of Rome came out, we did our own version of that and we called it Streets of Pompeii. It's just generic, but, you know, that's a great mat too for, you could use that for D&D for a city scene. You know, I get a lot of, a use out of that mat as well. And that's another thing we found too, is, you know, people, they use these mats from, you know, ancients all the way up to modern, right? With a few swap outs and obviously in buildings and things like that. But I just love to see the creativity of what people do, you know, it just blows me away. I kind of have this fascination right now with medieval buildings. So I really, I'm working on kind of, I've been using miniature building authority buildings, but you know, for example, if York comes out with something, I definitely would buy a ton of his stuff too. But to do kind of like, I don't know how to describe it, but kind of almost like a Mordheim. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, no,
like a skirmish in a city, right?
Medieval, I get a picture in my head.
Yeah. 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 Medieval skirmish in a city. Actually, I've been waiting for Games Workshop to bring back Mordheim. I don't think they ever will. It's like the one thing I would buy, right? If they brought it back.
Such a fun game.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, it always turned into like a big melee in the middle of the board, but that was still fun. You know,
that was okay.
Yeah. It was okay. It was still fun. And, you know, I think Frostgrave kind of scratched that itch for me a little bit, right?
Yeah, that was,
you know,
fun too.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. But Mordheim, you know, I just love that concept. So I've been tinkering around with some medieval, you know, like a medieval city. I'm playing around with lighting. I posted stuff on social media a while back about what I did. I bought little tea lights and I put them in the buildings to light them up and turn the lights off. And it had this neat glowing effect of like a, you know, medieval city at night. And I thought, I just thought it was pretty cool. You know, I don't know if I'd want to play a game in that, but I just really wanted to see what it would look like. And I was definitely happy with the look of it, right? With, you know, lights, interior lights in the buildings. So, but, you know, that's kind of been one of my latest things. What else am I working on? Seminole War. I think I mentioned that. Napoleonics. A little bold action. I've been working on Germans and British in the desert, North Africa. I'm doing Marlborough, so War Spanish Succession in 25 millimeter with my friend Titch. What else? Oh, and War of the Roses. So me and Titch have been working on War of the Roses for like 20 years. It's one of those projects every year we add a few units. So we run these huge mega games now where we can, you know, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, you're talking like 24-foot table, troops end to end. Titch has most of it. I have some, but those are probably the things I'm working on right now. Plus, I'm always painting. I don't play a lot of D&D, but I still enjoy it and try to stay on, you know, up to date with it. But I love painting the figures, the fantasy figures, you know?
Yeah, they're just really interesting, I find.
Absolutely. Gelatinous cubes and, you know, dwarves with axes and half-orc assassins. And just, it's just fascinating. So if I go to a game store, I mean, I just can't resist picking up a few fantasy figures.
Do you tend to go for a Reaper or do you have other makers that you like for the fantasy stuff?
A Reaper is kind of my go-to. Yeah. I think it's just a, have so many things. So good. Yeah. And they just have crazy stuff too. They have all these camp scenes and catapults. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it doesn't matter what you're looking for. And a lot of that stuff's usable and historical. You know, I did a Shiloh game 2 years ago with some of the local guys. And I'd say probably half the stuff in my camps was from the fantasy range, you know, just, you know, just tents and horses and campfires and, I had little birds, so like chickens and stuff. I got the chickens. Actually, I think I got this from a French company, but they were designed to be fantasy. But anyway, little stacks of wood. You've probably seen the little wood piles, and you know, so probably half the stuff in the Civil War camp was fantasy stuff. But it works for any time period.
It's
so
fine.
Yeah, it was great. And I used a lot of casualty figures as people lounging around in the camp. So they weren't casualties; they were just people. You know, I put them in halfway inside of the tent, and it looked like they were just resting. You know, put a little pillow under them instead of being a casualty. they were just resting in camp.
I love it.
But yeah, so that was a lot of fun.
Used to love Architects of War for that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, they had great stuff.
I wish they were still around in some form, but unfortunately, All Quiet on the Martian Front killed them.
Yeah. I bought, they had it was like a Gone with the Wind, based on Gone with the Wind, Civil War, some skirmish figures. So I have this little miniature, like Rhett Butler and,
That's cool.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. They were neat, you know. I don't use them for anything with Gone with the Wind, but I use them just as civilians. I mean, they're basically ACW civilians. That's what I use them for. Yeah. So that was kind of neat. They had some neat stuff. Did you know, here's a little known fact. Did you know we had the license to do All Quiet on the Martian Front mats, and we actually produced those for them. And then when they went out of business, we had to pull those.
I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. We still have those. So, I mean, I guess technically we could print them, but I mean, we're not going to do that. But when they went out of business, we just took them. So we had worked at a licensing arrangement with them. And the mats are really cool. I actually, you know, offline, I'll show you an image, but it has that little red Martian, I forget what it's called now, kind of creeping in from some of the sides. You know what I'm talking about? So
yeah,
for like the deployment zones. But yeah, they're basically grass mats with some rows and fields. And but they were specifically designed for that game. And we sold them. Again, licensed, you know, so, but when they went out of business, we just took those off the website immediately.
Now, are these something which, of course, you probably can't sell, but that like as a giveaway or if they happen to make its way out in the world, it wouldn't cause you any legal trouble?
I don't know. I don't think I probably not. But once they went out of business and I know there was some legal activity there. The only association we had with them was we just had a licensing agreement to sell the mats. So, but we just figured, well, we'll just
be better off
just kind of burying that.
Curious, like if you ever had a convention or whatever.
Well,
some in the warehouse. Yeah. They're just like, here's a giveaway.
I don't think that would be a problem. I mean, I think there's a few laying around. I mean, I'm sure. So I have a bin of things I keep, you know, in my garage in these big you know, that we take to convention. I'm sure there's one buried in there somewhere. You know,
I was curious.
Yeah. I'll show it to you sometime. I'm sure I have one.
Like, for example, it's not the same, but I have old t-shirts from the show with old logos on them still from stuff that, you know, when our, because we sell merch, we don't really talk about it, but like, so we sell some merch and t-shirts.
Oh, you should talk about that. I would love some socks. I'll buy some coffee mugs. Yeah, you need to self-promote a little more.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes you're just too humble. Jonathan.
I'm terrible with all that.
I know.
We have t-shirts, but so we have some of these older ones and they're just there. And every so often, like one of my kids will take them or they use it as a dust rag or whatever. Or I'll be like, hey, here's this. And I'm at a thing. Who wants a t-shirt? And here you go.
There you go. That's funny. Well,
we used to do all sorts of stuff. We had custom wooden D6 and postcards and bumper stickers. And I think we did mugs at one point.
You need beer koozies. That's what gamers want.
Oh, beer koozies. Would be good. See, so I don't even think about that stuff. And Adrian's going to roll over in his grave, but I don't drink anymore. So
Well, there you go. Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, you could use it for any other canned beverage, I guess, but yeah. So I don't think about that anymore, but you're right. That's something that people would like.
Yeah. But yeah, you should talk about the merch. I think people would buy it. You know, I had no idea. This is the first I've heard of your merch. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, t-shirts really. Oh, and tote bags. We did that like an overnight gaming bag kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's something else. But I think that was a big thing. Like unisex men's t-shirts, women's t-shirts, kids' t-shirts.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. We should put some more work into that. It's like with all the designs you want to work on, which one are you going to do next?
That's right. Yeah. We do have some designs we're working on. Like I said, we've got Martian and a gas planet already kind of in the books. And Chris is working on a few more that should be ready for the Kickstarter. That's kind of the last thing we're waiting on, a few graphics and things like that. So should be exciting. So hopefully everybody, you know, stay tuned for the Kickstarter.
Do you have a definitive date yet or just kind of beginning?
Kind of loose date, I could say, would be, we're shooting for August 31st or September 1st, basically is our launch date. And typically how it works is we'll run it for that month. So let's say we'll run it for September and then October will be where it gets really crazy, at least on our end. So, you know, so printing. So the printers, I mean, those things will have to roll 24/7. I mean, just depending on how many orders we get, but
you'll get a lot,
you know, and then hopefully we print in October and then everything's shipping out in November. The concept is have it there in, you know, before the holidays. Right. So
nice.
That's kind of the concept, you know, we can do that. You know, one problem, and you've heard, you know, I know Sam, most of us talk about this. A big problem now is international shipping has gone up so much.
Yes.
It is crazy. So I'm a little concerned about that, but you know, I mean, there's nothing, it's out of our control. There's nothing we can do. I mean, mm-hmm. And, you know, even shipping to Canada wasn't so bad. Now it's bad. So it's very expensive.
Very bad.
Although one thing I have noticed, like especially to Canada, but also to maybe UK, the Europe as well, is it's expensive to like ship one mat. We already have run all our postage, but it's only marginally more expensive to ship like two or three. Does that make sense? So
yeah, no, it makes perfect sense.
It's kind of weird, but it's like, and that wasn't on purpose, by the way. We're like not encouraged, you know, we didn't do that on purpose. We're not encouraging
that's just how it works, though. Like
that's how it works.
That
so,
first
yeah.
pound or two is really what gets you. And then after that, the incremental
like,
is not
like
as
to
bad.
Canada, we can probably ship, you know, one mat and we could probably say, you know, I'd have to go back and look at three or four for the same price. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy. Yeah. So, but anyway, shipping's gone up, everything's going up. So, that's the only thing that's, you know, kind of out of our control and a little concerning, but, we'll ship anywhere, you know, but I'd say probably the biggest base we'll see would be US customers, obviously, you know, cause, with the ship
UK,
much more reasonable. Yeah. US, UK. Yeah. Most of our customers, I mean, the gaming industry is probably, if you say so, all our customers are US, Canada, UK, Europe, Australia. And
I was gonna say Australia, you get to add in,
and shipping Australia through COVID has been nuts. They actually stopped some shipping. They were holding packages. It's been crazy to ship to Australia. It'll get through eventually, but it'll take forever to get to Australia. We actually do have because of that, we have a distributor in Australia called Aetherworks. So if you're in Australia or New Zealand, listen to this, but Aetherworks, and Aetherworks actually distributes to hobby shops in Australia, New Zealand, and I think even some other smaller distributors down there. That can be kind of a cost-effective way, especially on the shipping. If you live in Australia or New Zealand, just go through Aetherworks.
No, that's a good thing to know. My audio editor actually lives down in Australia, so I get to hear about all the craziness that goes on down there with different things because of that. And he's always lamenting the shipping times, but also the astronomical price increase for mm-hmm. there, that it's not a straight conversion from mm-hmm. whatever it is. So if you take an American or, you know, British pounds or whatever, and then put it into Australian money, what companies there actually charge for in Australian money, it's not the same price. It's so much more inflated. And I'm not sure why. I'm sure it's some sort of tax or tariff kind of situation. I don't quite know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's just how much it costs to buy a set of dice, or he plays Legion, for example. For him to buy Legion uh-huh. figures is just nuts.
Wow. Well, yeah. Well, I feel for him. It's crazy. You know, I remember when that was reversed a long time ago, buying, you know, we were buying most of our miniatures from the UK, and it was mm-hmm. just crazy expensive. The exchange, you know, pound dollar rate was way off, and it was just crazy expensive. I remember placing orders for Dixon miniatures, and it was just, or War Game, you know, War Games Foundry.
Foundry,
I
mean, yeah.
Very, very pricey. But I remember those days.
Well, I like to joke with my buddy, the audio editor, that that's what he gets for living in a penal colony.
Yeah, and there you go. Yeah.
I was like, you know, if you behaved, you wouldn't be there, so you'd be fine.
That's funny.
No, he's a good guy. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I think, did you have him on a podcast once? I think.
Yeah, he's hosted some stuff, Joshua.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a radio presenter. He's a wonderful guy.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, okay, you're international. I didn't know your operation was international.
Yeah, and we have someone in Norway, and
wow.
Yeah, the rest are here in the States.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's weird to think there's a group of people here for a team that make this all happen.
That's awesome. Really weird. I didn't know that. Yeah. I just kind of thought you were one man show.
Way back in the day, that's how it was, and then it kind of, I know things happened, and I still don't understand how they happened, but they've happened. And yeah, so now I spearhead a lot of stuff, but I don't know if you feel this way, but I really kind of want to step back a little bit and spread it around more. So it's not just a me thing, and it's more individuals can participate in some way to kind of spread the wealth, get people opportunity for stuff.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I mean, it's harder with, you know, a real business like what you do, but even so, just bringing on some of the other designers, I think is pretty amazing. And it's also really good for the two of you so that it's not all just you. I mean, this, you know, certain amount of supervision and overseeing that comes into play, but.
Yeah. It's, and the other designers, it's, we use a couple from time to time, you know, to kind of, to help Chris with his workload or, it works out well, you know, and definitely internationally, that's a neat thing. Some of these guys are international as well, you know? So, that's a lot of fun. You know, Google Translate works wonders, right?
Yes, it does. I've had to use it in my work. I mean, I do government work in my real job, but sometimes we'll have individuals who come and they'll, once I had to do business with the national official, like Federal Library of the Government of Japan, and trying to send stuff, like I don't speak or read anything Japanese or kanji or anything, but trying to get stuff and understand what they were really saying. It was hard, but Google Translate helped a lot.
Yeah. It'll kind of get you there. Not exactly, but get you close, right?
No, it was enough that they felt that they were being respected and they were willing to kind of work. And it was interesting.
That's fun.
Yeah. We're good. Another world out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you get the Kickstarter coming end of August, beginning of September.
Yes.
And so you have the new designs coming for that. The amazing new size, which I think is fantastic. You don't have an answer for this, but I have to ask anyway, because this is what I do. What comes after the Kickstarter? What's the next thing after that?
You know, I'm not sure. That's a great question. I'll give you maybe a hint, but it's, we're having trouble sourcing the product. So do you remember our plush mats? So not the plush fleece, but the old plush mats.
Oh, I have several behind me and I love them to death.
Yeah, so we're trying to source that same material. So that material kind of became really scarce, and we couldn't get it. Okay, so just, you know, exactly that. We could get something similar, but we're trying to get that material again, so we can do the older plush mats, right? So remember the plush mats? You have them. They have that 3D grassy texture, right?
Yeah, they do.
which really looks neat. I mean, you can run a tank through it, a model tank, and see the tank tread marks, right, through the grass. Mm-hmm. You can fluff it with your hand, and it'll hide the base of figures. And the length was perfect. It wasn't too tall, like teddy bear fur, where the figures were flopping over all the time, but it wasn't too short either, right? So that's a possibility. I can't promise that, and that might be a Kickstarter. It depends, you know, it depends how much material we can get too, right? So that's the one thing, we have to buy the material. So if we can source enough material, we'll, if we have an unlimited source, we'll just make them basically unlimited. We'll just make it an item in our catalog. But if we can only get, you know, 500 units or whatever, we'll probably have to do a Kickstarter and limit the amount. But, that's a potential, you know.
Oh, I'm more excited about that than I am about the upcoming Kickstarter, to be honest.
Okay. Well, that's just something that's still kind of got a big question mark over it, right?
No, so that's a possibility.
But I know, for example, the guys, Alvaro and Francisco, Aritze, mm-hmm. the Clash of Spears, Clash of Katana guys, a lot of the pictures in their book are of those plush mats, right? You know,
they're so good.
So the plush mixed ground is what they use, but those were great. I use them. Then there was a point we couldn't get that fabric anymore. So
I was very sad when that happened.
Yeah. So we're working on that. I'd say that'd be the big, you know, thing past this Kickstarter. We're going to say focus on this Kickstarter. We don't like to start any project until we fulfill a Kickstarter. I think that's just a good policy to have. So
I love that.
Yeah, we're going
to. Every company does that, though.
Yeah, I just think we're going to take care of this, and once that last customer has their mat in the hand, then we'll start on the next project. You know, we want everybody happy and satisfied, and everybody to have the product before we start on another Kickstarter or any other kind of major project. We might drop some new designs in, but we won't start any big project till we take care of this one.
No, I think that's a very smart and respectful way to go about it. In the past, I recall, maybe just once in a Kickstarter, you allowed, it was like a top level, whatever, you allowed whoever got it to come up with an idea for a design and you would do it.
We did that. Yeah.
Design. Are you going to do that again?
No. That okay. Actually, it worked out fine. Actually, we anticipated some potential problems there, as you could imagine. Right.
Yeah. No, definitely.
but it worked out fine. We designed, and basically how that worked is we designed two custom mats if they backed at a certain level, and we designed them, sent it to them. Although part of the agreement was we would, they had that mat for like a year. I forget the exact timing, but you know, that it was there, no one else had it. And then we, part of the deal was we agreed that after a year, we would just add that to our catalog. So it wasn't really exclusive for them. It was exclusive for them for like a year. They got to design the mat. You know, we own the rights to it. But it was theirs. They were the only one in the world to have it for like a year, which is kind of cool, you know. That is cool. And then after that, we added it back into our catalog. And we might do something like that again. But that there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of, you know, I don't like this, I like that. And, you know, that. It's time consuming. You know, if you've ever designed something or, you know, so we may or may not do that again, but yeah, that was fun. That was definitely kind of something fun that we did. I think it drove Chris crazy, you know, a lot of the back and forth and the design things, but it's all good. It's all good.
No, that this is terrible, but I kind of like that it drove him just a little crazy, because I think people who are creative in that way, I think they need a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah. It was like somebody just nudging him or poking him, you know, for a little bit. Yeah. It just got under his skin just enough to make him a little uncomfortable, which brought out his creative juices, so to speak, you might say. Right.
Yeah. That's how growth happens. Right.
That's right. Absolutely. I'm a big believer in that. Got to get out of the comfort zone. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have a hard time with that, but I'm a firm believer in it too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So if people want to stay up to date with all the things that you're doing and all the stuff happening at Scarebox Battle, what are the best ways for them to do it?
The best way is really social media. We do have a website. I'll be honest with you, we don't update the website the way we used to. You know, the best social media is where it's at now. You probably see that with your podcast. So we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. If you want to follow us, see what we're doing, stay up to date, that's the way to go. We don't really update our YouTube much. We don't really update our website as much. We could do better with that, but we update, I want to say almost daily, what we're posting on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So that's where you want to reach out to us, and that's where you want to contact us, is through social media.
No TikTok or Snapchat?
No, Jonathan. You never know, right? You never know. But no, we're just going to stick with Facebook and Instagram and Twitter for now. No TikTok or Snapchat yet. I'm sure me and Chris would look great dancing on TikTok, but and you would too. But we're no. I think we're going to stay clear of those. I'll leave that to my kids, right?
I was just thinking that's how you reach the kids, right? Isn't that what they're on now?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm not young anymore.
They are and I'm sure there's something new. But my kids, they're definitely on TikTok and Snapchat and all that.
So I like to tell people that. You know, they can keep up to date with the show, but because we're on all the things as Wargaming Recon. And the caveat is, like, all the things is all the what I would refer to as reasonable things that I can keep up with. TikTok and Snapchat not being any of those. I don't understand them, and I would do them very badly. Probably be humorous, but just not how it would work for me. What are the usernames or handles that you use for your Insta? I think it's the kids refer to it, your Facebook.
So Insta is CBB Picks. So like Cigar Box Battle Picks, but it's CBB Picks. That's our handle on Instagram. So at CBB Picks, and Facebook's just Cigar Box Battle, and Twitter, same thing, just Cigar Box Battle. So we should be very easy to find. Only tricky one would be Instagram, where we use, it's not Cigar Box Battle, it's CBB Picks, P-I-C-S.
I think the Insta limits the number of characters you use anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure, but that's kind of where we're at there. And definitely follow us there. That's like, that's where you'll stay up to date with us. We post new designs. We post pictures of, you know, what guys are doing with the mats, you know, just all that creativity out there. There's, you know, Jeff Wazileski, you know, there's just a lot of people out there doing some fantastic things with the mats that I would have never envisioned, you know.
Maybe I'll dig up that photo of me with Cigar Box Man.
Oh, yeah.
Put it on our Insta and tag you.
I probably have it saved somewhere. It's probably in my pictures. Yeah.
It's so goofy, but I mean, that's me. So.
Well, I remember you and Adrian talking about that. I think you guys did review at some point. And Adrian was such a great, he was just the straight man to you, right? He was, you guys were a great team, you know? He would definitely brought a little bit of that. I don't want to call, you know, maybe that the grognard, kind of that grouchy grognard to it. The realist, very grounded, you know. He would just, you got it, it, that I always enjoyed the episodes and hearing him talk. It was a blast.
Oh, you talking about the designs and Chris having some with the Tritio mat.
Oh, yeah.
Just made me think of like that whole kind of getting under the skin. That's basically all I did with Adrian. Like,
oh, yeah.
Let me just see how much you're going to tolerate of this. And he was wonderful. Just fantastic.
Awesome.
In so many ways. But yeah, he had quite a few things to say to me about using your mat as a blanket and pretending I was a Jedi with it. And as a superhero cape.
What you do with the mat, that's your thing, Jonathan. I'm not.
That's true.
Yeah, you do your thing. I'm not judging you. You do whatever. You do your thing.
Yeah, you know, someday I'm going to win, though. It'll become a blanket on the bed someday.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, especially, you know, I think some of the mats with the roads and the fields, I think it'd be a cool, like a themed room. I don't know, you know, what the theme would be, or a nautical room, have like a Caribbean mat or the island. I mean, you could use it. You really could use it almost like a blanket. There's no reason you couldn't. Yeah. So
she admits that they're very soft and comfortable. So I got that going. We'll see. But I'll tell her you said it's a good idea.
Give her one for Christmas and just label it bed, you know, sheets or something. Bedspread.
That's like happy anniversary. Here's your iron.
I made that mistake newly married. I think my first year of my marriage. Yeah. Oh yeah. I think I was just. You know, thinking very practically, logically, I think I got her like a vacuum or something, you know, because we needed one, right?
But well, yeah,
it shouldn't have been a gift, a Christmas gift, right? Obviously. So I learned that very quickly. That was, I think a lot of new husbands learn those kind of things very quickly. God. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a learning curve, man.
First and last year I ever did something like that. Yeah. It wasn't the only gift, obviously, but I remember when she opened it up, the look I got, I was like, yeah, okay, just let's put that away.
Oh, look, it's a vacuum.
Yeah. She wasn't jumping up and down, right?
Oh, man, but it was top of the line.
But you know me, I was like, hey, this is good quality. I got it for a great price. We need one. Ours is on the fritz, right? You know, everything I said was true, but definitely didn't. It didn't generate any excitement, Jonathan.
Don't you like to vacuum?
Yeah.
I love to vacuum. I'd be like, yes, I got a new vacuum.
It's funny. Yeah, one of my kids when he was little, he loved vacuums. That's what his thing. He just walk around with a vacuum cleaner all day. It's just kids do some crazy things, you know.
Well, that's why they have those toy ones. I know we bought a fair share of those. They're more likely to play that they're cleaning instead of actually cleaning up their rooms and their stuff.
That's right.
Well, I really appreciate you taking this time to be on the show, and you've been very generous with your time. And just, like I said at the beginning, I was giddy to have you, and I'm so happy that you were able to do it.
It was great to talk to you. It was great to be on the show. Great, you know, yeah, great to see you. You know, we're looking at each other here, but you know, had a great time, and thanks for having us on. And you know, let's do it again. Some, you know, do it again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to thank everyone else for taking the time to listen to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I hope you had fun. Don't forget to check out the Cigar Box Battle Kickstarter coming end of August, early September of 2022. And I think there's going to be some amazing stuff there. Thank you again for being on this episode, Corey. And everyone, just check out the socials and see all the things there for it. And I just want to remind everyone, no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking, what mat should I get in the Kickstarter coming up in September of 2022? You know that you have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2021 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, we'd like to thank 3DDZYN at 3ddesign.com, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, and Things from the Basement, where you can get highly detailed laser-cut terrain kits for 28, 20, and 15mm figures and other exciting products. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so much for your support and being part of our community. We hope you are enjoying the 2021 season.